Hello and welcome to Null Pointers, the podcast where Mark teaches me everything I need to know and I just look at him in a dumb way. We are your hosts, Stephen.
And Mark, looking in a dumb way.
I was the one looking in a dumb way.
Let's get back to that later.
Yes.
So, Stephen, since I should be teaching you something where you can be looking at me in a dumb way, did you know that .NET 10 has already been released, like the first preview?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I had this interesting discussion the other day with someone who was like, oh, my God, Microsoft is way too fast. You know, .NET 9 just has been released. How dare they drop the next .NET on me? And I go like, mate, cool down. This .NET version is probably just for the people that are super on edge, really like their stuff to explode. It's preview one is like super early. I think like if you are, if you notice this, that .NET is super early, I think some people appreciate it because they're like, they're involved in all of these .NET development things. But for the majority of people, you want something stable, you want something to update to, and yeah, I understand that it might be a bit quick if we have early of the year of 2025 and you just heard like in 2024 that a new version has dropped and you think like, oh, I should probably still upgrade to that. I'm maybe still thinking about that step and already the next one is coming. So that can feel a bit overwhelming at times, but yeah, it started the next release train, and I think it's only logical, right? I mean, once you deployed .NET 9 and you're working on a .NET team, what's next? I guess .NET 10. So yeah, but we'll put the link into the show notes. If you are on the bleeding edge and you really want to try it out, there will be other previews coming along. I think right now it's also the early versions, they're not really nicely integrated. So if you're hoping for getting it, I think even via Visual Studio Preview, that's not yet the case. So, but yeah, a bit of news. Something new coming along, .NET 10, another long-term support version.
So when's your next presentation somewhere? Because typically you upgrade your machine just before you have your next presentation.
Uh-huh,
so
I'm counting on you. Well, I think my 2024 theme. Because I usually am a lazy person when it comes to upgrading early. I seldomly take preview bits onto my machine because I like stuff working. The stuff that I'm working on is already in preview, so I don't need the stuff that I build up on to also be in preview, unless I give a talk about a feature that has been in preview. So in .NET 9, the hybrid web view for MAUI was in preview, so that's why I mainly jumped onto that. I will not be doing that this year, probably. I still have to check out what's actually coming along in .NET 10. I don't know if that already has been finalized or materialized. I'm still getting my grips on it, but there is now a really nice repository on GitHub where you can see all the changelogs that are happening. So they're all dropped there now, which is really cool. So definitely something we should keep an eye on, Stephen, because who knows?
Maybe
something interesting is about to come, and then we'll have some cool things to talk about or try out.
I actually submitted some PRs to .NET MAUI, which I hope they don't take until .NET 10. Let's hope they're in a service release somewhere along the way soonish. But yeah.
Well, I think that's always a nice struggle to have, and I'm happy to not. My company, we also make a product, and it's always like people like screaming to like have this feature like in the previous version. But I mean, you can't just patch something without testing it, right? So you always have got the testing process, and that takes time and effort. And the more wanky or disturbing or disruptive a feature is, the testing gets more and more complex. So yeah, I think it's always a bit of a fight to keep something like in the usual cycle. But I must say, I think if your changes are not too like disruptive or too big, usually I think they try to pack them into the service releases.
Yeah, I think it's more of a, they could have already been in if I wasn't too late with submitting them for specific deadlines, obviously. But I think the service releases are monthly anyway, so it's not that big of a weight.
I mean, that's, I think, one of the upsides of how they have structured MAUI, because they used to have like everything in the .NET release cycle. So you could, so only when like official patches came out for .NET, you would then be able to update the workload, and the workload was like packed into, so the workload also had, like the MAUI bits. And now if you got like something that is not like a error that is like in the runtime, they got like additional options. And I think the workloads is still something that a lot of people bump their head against, because you have to keep, because if you update your .NET SDK, it does not automatically update the workload, because the workload has not been bundled with the SDK to keep the SDK a bit smaller and not like make you install gigabytes of stuff that you don't need. So yeah. Who knows? Maybe, I mean, I think if you're like on Windows and you only use the Visual Studio install, I think you're fine for the most part. It's only like us trying to get the latest and greatest bits and then forgetting to do stuff, and then everything explodes in your IDE and you shake your head over your head and run screaming through the room until you remember, got to update that workload.
So, at least for me, typically it says, you need to update your workload, friend. Run this command. And then it wants to update WASM experimental for some reason. I don't know why that's always the one that it needs to update.
But,
yeah.
I can only say, like, having installed preview bits last year on my machine, the teams at Microsoft do not have an easy job, because, I mean, obviously you want to reuse stuff that you're building. So for instance, logging and stuff, you don't want that every team. You don't want the ASP.NET team, the MAUI team, I don't know what, not every team, the WinForms team, all to implement their own logging. So you extract that. But with that, you have then again certain dependencies that you always have to align. So, I mean, it's no easy feat, because there's some large teams working there. And they all have to be in synchronized for certain things. So I think, given the complexity, I'm not complaining.
Definitely not. So would you say that it's quite a tough landscape to navigate?
I think it depends about the landscape. But
I'm bridging, Mark.
You're bridging. Yeah. Navigating. Well, I guess the navigation is always depends a bit how easy you set it up.
See what we did there. Yes, so, dear listener who's completely lost right now, our goal for this episode was to talk a bit about navigation, and not necessarily navigation using your GPS to your next Starbucks or wherever you want to go, but navigation inside your app. So, basically, we've talked in the past about the Community Toolkit MVVM, which is typically the type of framework you're looking for when building a MAUI app, some kind of MVVM. And this one from Microsoft does a lot of cool things, but what it doesn't do, and it explicitly doesn't do that, I think, is navigation, because that's not necessarily the same on every platform that you can actually run that MVVM toolkit in. So navigation, meaning pushing new pages into the front, removing pages, switching tabs, all kinds of things like slide out drawers and God knows what else you can come up with in your mobile app. That all needs to be triggered by something, which is the navigation in this case. And I recently had some trouble, I guess, with my navigation, which is where this episode sort of spawned from, where the navigated from method in my navigation was being called on the page that it was navigating to. So strange things happening there, which is why I asked Mark, what are you using to navigate? And Mark was like, well, there's like a gazillion frameworks. There's this shell, which comes built in. It's right off the shelf.
Yeah. See what I did there? Right off the shelf. It's included. Batteries included. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes Shell and I are not friends. I don't know. We have a tough relationship.
I can understand that, especially like if you've been a bit longer in the Donny Maui space. I think Shell even started out in Xamarin Forms back in the day.
Could be.
You might have to correct me there. I'm not 100% certain on that. But I remember like the idea of Shell basically is, as the name says, it's like the shell of your app. So you have like the basic structure of how your pages are and how, with that, how the navigation is between those pages. And you have like one file where you could describe that, and there were some idioms that you just had to know, because then Shell would like do stuff. Like if you arrange it like that and that, the default would be tabs, and you could then have tabs on top and at the bottom, and you could have the site drawer and navigation between sites and all that. And so you could define that in Shell. You could register your pages, and it was at the beginning, it was, I think, a lot more limited. So I remember when it came out and people said, like, yeah, you should use Shell. So I was like, okay, let's give it a go. And after I think 2 days, I just noticed that I cannot fulfill the requirements that I have from the navigation that it's been given for the app. So I then had to ditch it and use the good old navigation page for that one to get it running. And yeah, I mean, I think Shell has come a long way since then. So you can now have some wonky navigation behaviors, or maybe not. Like, if you just build your run-of-the-mill app with like two or three pages and you have to swap between them, and you maybe got a tab or a flyout and maybe like a list view that you then go into a detail page, something like that, for the most part, you will be fine with Shell. It's like when you want to start massaging your navigation history, like you say, I'm on this detail page and I changed something there. So the next time I navigate back, I'll skip the last two pages and I go right back to the root page, some sorts of stuff like that. That was like, Shell did not like you or did not offer you like great support for that. And those things are not in every app. But it also means like you had to know like what are the limitations of Shell and blah, 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 blah. So I still think there are some limitations in those aspects that you can do if you go like right to the navigation service or navigation page. I think your mileage may vary. And if you don't have those limitations, it really makes things a bit easier once you get to know it. One caveat I still have a bit with the Shell is navigation parameters, because usually when you change from one site to the next, you kind of have to tell the other site, like, hey, I clicked on this thing in the list view, so the user probably wants to see that. So you have to like somehow give that information over. There are many different ways how you can do it. You can just give us a parameter, and then you look it up in some local storage or some local service, or you give the entire object. And we could have an entire philosophy discussion, what is the proper path there and whatnot, but we will skip that for now. And Shell has got, I think, three or four ways how you can do navigation. And I think like that was like, it evolved over time. Like there was like a very simple time, and then it was like, yeah, this is not enough. And then some bits were added. There are some ways how I just think like that looks quite painful that are still like in the standard. And I know like once it's in the standard and it's been published, you can't take it out anymore. But it makes it a bit more confusing once you get started with Shell, in my humble opinion. What I do really like though is you got like this URL-based routing. So if you have ever done anything in the interweb, so like some websites, you can basically define URLs for your pages, and like there will also be, if you are on your root page and then you go to a list page and then you go to a detail page, you will then have those in the URL. You can encode them, and you can also make it with dot dot. You can go back. So there's some nice functionalities baked in there that can make it a bit easier to do this entire navigation stuff. I'm a bit on the fence about Shell. One thing I have to say though, if you've ever used Maui Reactor, that's like the MVU style based approach. I think we've already talked in the show about this. That also gives you the option to use Shell. And I really like the approach that has been used there for the navigation properties, because it's just like you have one object that you define as navigation property, and on the other side, it's just known because you gave it concrete types. And the shell implementation is like a bit more flexible.
Here's an object.
Yeah, here's an object. It could be anything. And yeah, it works perfectly, but I've preferred like working with concrete types, because if I change that thing or rename it, it will slap me instantly in the face that it's broken over there. Whereas if you got like, if you make the router or object and stuff, it will probably be a runtime exception. And if you don't do your testing really well, it won't be the compiler snapping your face. It might be your boss. No, your boss won't be doing that, but maybe a customer. But yeah, I think we're out of the people slapping people face in business. So yeah, but still not quite as fun.
And I think for me, I like the URI based routing stuff, but it's also a bit like you'll never hard code the names, right? You're probably going to use some sort of name of construction where you're actually referring to a type, to at least catch errors in your routing somewhat swiftly. But there's all this whole other school of thought where it's like, but I don't want to reference my pages in my view models, which should be logic based and not necessarily view/page based. So there is also probably people building upon shell who are implementing it in a way where you're actually navigating to a view model, and at runtime it'll resolve the page that belongs to that view model, or the view if need be. But the first thing you said when I typed that to you was leaky, leaky. Like, that was the word that came up a lot. So you have some experiences with that, I suppose, where it's not optimal.
Sense. I think this is a bit of a loaded topic, or it used to be at least.
Probably. this whole MVVM navigation, I feel like, is a lot of opinions.
I think there's no necessary right or wrong way how you can do it. You have to choose your poison and then just stick to it. I think the worst thing you can do is write an app and you got like three or four, all the patterns we mentioned during this episode, like mixed into that one app. I think that is like the biggest nightmare. But you touched on the topic that there used to be like the day when view models were like the way of writing apps. I think with the entire MVU movement, we are questioning if view models are the one all and be all. I like view models. There's nothing wrong with them, but there just like comes a certain complexity with them, because you write your view and then you write your view model and then you write your models and services and blah, blah, blah. So you got like some ceremony, but the basic idea was we do not want to mix our platform into the view models, because what that would allow you is, if you like writing like iOS or Android specific code or pages, like in the iOS and Android specific way, like implement them natively. If you do it right, you can have one view model that you then can plug into those both views, and you can then reuse all the logic in the view model, so you get a lot more reuse. These days, we usually have frameworks that eliminate that, so we no longer have to write two views. We write it once in .NET MAUI or Flutter or React Native or whatever your poison is, and then you don't have that anymore. That like the logic behind, like if you were pack that logic from the view model into the views and you had to write them multiple times, you would write your logic multiple times. There is a infinitely greater risk that your apps will behave a bit different depending on platform. And that was like, I think that one of the main reasons why you wanted to have a lot of these things in your view model. And that also meant like, hey, if I navigate in my application, I don't want to navigate to a native page, because then I will be using the native navigation thing and I will be having to re-implement that everywhere and blah, blah, blah. So I want to actually, if I could just navigate from one view model to the next and then have some framework figure it out what I want to display, that would be like really neat. And I think the problem is the navigation service is like also very platform specific. So if I have a desktop application, I'll be interacting with it differently. Like, it's a different concept of how you work with these things than if you are on a mobile phone. Back in the day, it was also Windows Phone, which also had a bit of a different concept in navigation. So that's I think where the leaky thing comes in, because it's like super hard to abstract something or make it like the most generic version of everything if you got fundamental differences and you want to accommodate your user by presenting him these different options, because they will help him make or use your app more efficiently. And so for me, that's why I am not a big fan of using view model navigation. If you're using them and they're fine for you and you've got no problems and you think like, I got no idea what leaky abstractions you're talking about, you be you. You be happy. Use them. I'm happy that it works for you. But yeah. And I know like there are a couple of view model frameworks that have navigation implemented into them. And I think I understand the MVVM toolkit for why they like said like, yeah, we'll not do that.
We'll steer clear from this.
Yeah. Because whenever you had these things, there was always like, yeah, but I want to be able to, if I'm on platform X, I want to be able to do this, you know, I want to be able to use my fabulous action button.
Floating action button, Mark.
Floating
It is fabulous, button. But it is yeah. Floating also.
Yeah, I want to use that for navigation purposes. I want to do these things. And it was like, yeah, but that only works on platform, this and that. And then the others, you implement something wonky. And yeah, it's just like once you want to use platform-specific things, that's usually when things get a bit hairy because
where your abstraction dies.
Options. Yeah. And so, I always think that's been a bit of a problem when you want to do the navigation in the view model, because yeah, it's just not quite as generic as we would hope to be. I think at the beginning, it's just like, yeah, you know, it's super easy. We just do navigate from one page to the other. And then we still got modal navigation where you just like laid on top and stuff like that. And then that works. And then your boss or designer comes and says, I got this super great idea, because I've seen in the latest presentation of Google from Google that you can do this and that on Android, and just go like, no, please go away. You'll break everything.
Yeah. You can have six modals flying in from all angles. I want that.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Yeah.
We'll blow you away.
So I think that also kind of reflects in the amount of MVVM frameworks is somewhat similar to the amount of opinions. Like,
might be.
There's so many of these things. Like, I was, after our chat, I was looking on the internet to see if there was something that already did kind of what I was looking for. And just the amount of things that you come across, some you've never even heard of, it's absurd. To be honest, like, there's so many things and so many people who obviously are also struggling with this conundrum of what is the way to do it. And they all ended up rolling their own and publishing it in hopes of other people having similar problems. But in the end, that's where I ended. I rolled my own because
you rolled it wrong.
I rolled my own because the scenarios that I wanted to support, like, a lot of these MVVM libraries do a lot of things and try to do a lot of things, which, I mean, all credits to them. But for my navigation, I just wanted a few scenarios and I was just better off implementing them on my own, just not taking a library because of all the other stuff that you load into your project that I didn't need at that point. And also the community toolkit MVVM already did a lot of that stuff for me, which I'm not rewriting because the other library also happens to have that, but slightly different. So I don't want to load in 10 MVVM frameworks just to mix and match parts of it. That also sounds horrible to me.
So sure sounds interesting.
I mean, I'll just roll my own then for navigation, I guess.
I think it's like really interesting because the navigation, I think there are like two reasons why you start rolling your own. I think one is because, as you said, there is this general mantra that you do not want to have any page logic in your view model, so to keep that separate. And that is, I think, a noble thing to do. but Yeah, I'm questioning that a bit. If we cannot use like services from MAUI, which is an abstraction from platforms like in itself, so that we can just use that directly. So basically, why not use the navigation service that you get from the .NET MAUI framework? Because it will, under the hood, again, use the navigation service from iOS and Android, like if you're doing mobile, to do your navigation. And I think the second part is, so people go like, yeah, I shouldn't do that, so I'll write a wrapper, because that navigation service is like super complex and I only need like these two or three simple tasks. So I'll just wrap that complex service, put in my own, because then I'm not directly referencing the framework that I'm running on. So I got like this reusability, and I'm putting that in air quotes, because if we ever choose to run our view model on Blazor, which I don't know if that is an E that you have, but you might have it, I could then swap out that navigation service that I'm using for MAUI with something equivalent that is in the Blazor space. I mean, that can be a reason. And the other thing is just like simplification, because those navigation services, they can be quite complex. Like they got multiple parameters that you have to set, and you can just go like, I'll just set a few defaults. I'll just help myself out here, so I don't have to repeat myself everywhere. And then I just got that wrapped. I've just noticed it. I mean, I've done this in the past, and it's just like it ends up very simple. And then your navigation service starts to grow, your wrapper, and it starts to grow and grow and grow. And suddenly, before you notice, you got like 200 lines of wrapping around something that is probably still a bit larger than 200 lines, but still, you know, there comes like this point where you're like, we could probably just start integrating this thing directly. But yeah,
probably could. Yeah. Yeah, I'm noticing that as well. Like I said, I rolled my own, and it wasn't a horrible job to do or very complex in that sense, but it can definitely grow. Because like you need to get, there's a navigation property on each page that references its navigation. So if you want to navigate with that page, you're going to have to use that iNavigation interface that MAUI provides there. But that also works differently if you're on a tabbed page or on a navigation page or on just a content page, or like it all also kind of depends on your route. So you're writing all these scenarios where if it's a tab page, let's do it this way. If it's this, do it that way. And yeah, like it can grow very quickly in that sense, especially if your app uses, which I think are fairly standard components in tabs and navigation and drawers and all that stuff. But yeah, you do kind of typically need to support those scenarios, because that's what a typical app looks like. So yeah, it does definitely grow pretty quickly, I've noticed.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've done things like in the past where you don't pass in the navigation properties into the view model itself, but you have like these, I call them callbacks. So whenever I add the view model into the view during, like in the constructor or when it's being rendered, I will then set certain methods. Like you can just like have some lambda methods that are just like not initialized, or like with inert lambda functions that just do nothing, and the view then sets them. And like at the end of certain action blocks, like when you have the command invoker, it will then call that action or func that you've declared as property. And that was then set again from the view, so then the navigation will happen and stuff like that. It sounds a bit wonky, maybe, but it allows you to separate these things a bit out. Because I've noticed, like one of the things that I've noticed when I've been doing MVU lately is like you do a lot of things when doing view models that are just basically juggling these things. Like you got the information, like you invoke a command, you get information, and then you put into a property, and that's like all nice and neat and separate it. And then you got like the gnarly bits where you're like, yeah, but if I do this, I would like to have a busy indicator, or I would like to have like some things going on. And there are like these just like certain bits, they work super well with bindings, and other things that just don't work with bindings, and you somehow have to invoke some logic.
Some events or something, yeah.
Some stuff that just like, or some animation stuff that you just need in the code behind, and it's always like, how do I integrate this? And just like, sometimes it just feels like the juggling part that you're doing there is just like so much more than the benefits that you get from separating that data logic part, because like you might test, because you might have that logic again minimally in the view model and a lot more like in another service that you could then easily unit test and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm a bit on the fence with the view model thing, but that's more thing a personal thing. In most business apps these days, I'm still using view models, so I'm just saying, getting old, thinking about stuff that I probably should be thinking.
Yeah, well, I do agree in the sense that I'm abstracting most of the stuff away from the view models. Like it's really just a driver for the interface at this point, where you're clicking a button and it just calls into some other service who does all the logic, which I guess also makes me not as worried about referencing the page in the view model for navigation, for example, where I'm like, okay, well, this view model really has no value outside just driving the interface.
Yeah,
showing things in properties, navigating, triggering animations, like you said. Like it's fine like that. I'm not as worried about referencing pages in the view models at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember like there. I've never done this on my own end, but I remember they used to be back in the day. There used to be like these certain view model frameworks that then started to give these options that you could then hook into certain things, so that you could then trigger UI animated stuff from the view model, but you would then be like decoupled, and they would do some magic shenanigans to do that. Yeah, I mean, in the end, I think if it works for you, good for you. I'm just too simple-minded, I think, sometimes for these scenarios, and I just go like, okay, I see the docs over here from Microsoft. I know how this works. I'll just do it, and I'll be fine. I'll evoke it.
Yeah.
But I remember back in the day when Windows 8 was still a thing, just showing my age, you know, flexing my age muscle there a bit. We had an app that was running on Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8. And though they both had an 8, they were completely different platforms in the UI sense. So having a good view model abstraction layer there made absolute 200% sense, because you could reuse basically 90% of the app, and you just still had to remodel the XAML a bit so it would actually work. For those, if you got a scenario like that, I think view models can make a huge amount of sense, like business wise, because you'll write a lot less code and stuff like that. For other things like testability and everything, that thing has been, I think that is a bit harder to do right now, also with .NET MAUI, like testing your view code. I've also heard people going on record like,
yep,
don't want to do that. So you can test your logic, put it into a separate .NET library and just test that, but don't test the stuff in your actual .NET MAUI project. So for me, like it gets harder and harder to like justify jumping through these additional loops, because the end benefit is just no longer there, because .NET MAUI has done all the work for me. So yeah. That's I think my key takeaway from this discussion, that maybe we can leave some abstractions behind because someone else has done the work for me, which sounds great.
It's all the better, all the better. The less I have to do, the more you can do for me, Mark.
Yeah, living the lie. So Stephen, when can we expect your new view model service to appear on NuGet?
MVVM.pancake. I don't know.
Yeah, coming in never ever year.
Stay tuned. No, it's probably not coming. It'll probably stay where it is right now.
Yeah,
nestled inside this little app.
I think that's also like something. It's really tough to abstract away the navigation service, because those features are there for a reason. And I've seen many people like trying to write wrappers for things, and it always felt a bit strange. And these days, I usually try not to have to do that unless there is a really good reason for it. Because I also see people like writing the repository pattern around EF core, and I go like, you do realize that EF core is a repository in itself.
It's essentially already.
That's I think like the same opinion that I have when you wrap the navigation service. You're just wrapping something that's already wrapping something. So
yeah,
which I mean, it's nice. I do that sometimes at Christmas, you know, like wrap a gift in another wrapper layer, so it seems like a lot larger. Yeah, the disappointed faces when they get through the first layer. Priceless.
I don't want to get a Christmas present from you then, you little Grinch.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
So yeah, that's also like I this bot might already show it, but I don't really have strong opinions on this is how it should be. This is my new package is going to solve all world hunger navigation issues. I don't have a strong opinion on how that should be, so it makes no sense wrapping that and thinking this is how other people should maybe do it as well. Just do you. So with that, I think we can wrap up this show on navigation. We've been your hosts, Stephen Tewisse.
And Mark Halliburton.
Follow us on all the socials. Don't forget to like and subscribe on any podcast app that you're using, and we'll talk to you next time.